The PGA Tour's Policy Board met last night in South Florida, and on the agenda, negotiations with the Public Investment Fund and radical changes to the format of the Tour Championship. We'll have the latest on what was decided and what wasn't. A year ago, Austin Eckroat survived the meat grinder that is PGA National for his first Tour victory. He now is two, but can he become the first player ever to repeat here? We'll ask him. And there's a high-profile debut at the Cognizant Classic this week. Three-time major winner Jordan Spieth is in the field. We'll hear from the golden child as he plots his way back from surgery. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Thanks for joining us on this Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside George Savarikas, the PGA Tour beginning the Florida swing this weekend at PGA National. One of my favourite weeks of the year, George, only because I'm a sadist, as you know, because this is not a week where you're going to see well under par, winning double digits under par. I think only twice in the last 15 years is better than 12 under par won at PGA National. If recreational golfers want to see the best in the world suffer like us, this is the week where you're going to see it.
Who would have thought that the cynical Irishman would like some carnage instead of some fun in the sun when you get to Florida? But this stretch on the PGA Tour, it's a grind for guys these next 4 weeks. If you look at last year, the only winning score that had a two handle in it was at the Players. No one says the stadium course is easy, yet that was the easiest stop of the 4 weeks. So the intensity level ratcheted up a notch for this next month in Florida. So the PGA Tour Florida swing is getting underway in Palm Beach Gardens. You can catch live first round coverage of the Cognizant Classic Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Let's take a look at some of the notables in the field. Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. How about the AM? Luke Clanton needs one more point as part of that PGA Tour U Accelerated program to get his PGA Tour card. Ricky Fowler, home game this week. Austin Eckroat, past champion. How about Jordan Spieth sliding into the mix? Was a bit of a surprise announcement that he is going to be in the field.
Well, the top FedEx point earners, the top five between the Mexico Open and Vedanta World last week and this week's Cognizant Classic, earned spots in the Arnold Palmer Invitational presented by MasterCard next week via the Aon Swing 5. And here are those current standings. Aldrich Hutgaiter is not in the field this week, but Salinda, Griffin, Dahman and Højgaard all are. And that's where things stand inside the ropes. But as you know, so much of the action in golf this week is outside of the ropes as well. And yesterday, the PGA Tour's Policy Board met in South Florida with the latest on what we know. We welcome in Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard. Rex, what have you picked up from yesterday's machinations behind the scenes?
Yeah, Eamon, as you pointed out, there's a lot of talk outside the rope about last week's meeting at the White House between the Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And the focus is clearly on the Tour leadership. As you pointed out, that leadership met here yesterday at PGA National for a policy board meeting. And a member of that group, Jordan Spieth, he was actually serving in his last policy board meeting. He's rotating off the board, being replaced by Camilo Villegas. And even though he declined to give any specifics about that White House meeting and what may come next in those negotiations, he did address potential changes to the Tour Championship format.
I think the idea is just to make the fan experience the best, make, you know, NBC, get them very involved in what they think is going to be the best option, and ideally you end up having the most exciting Saturday-Sunday situation that's easy to follow with the most drama you can have that goes all the way down to the last hole. So, we've had a couple different iterations of it. In the first iteration, I think the pushback was whoever it was didn't want two different champions. It was confusing on the same green. Then you go to the stroke format, and although easier to follow, I think I think the idea is the tour, the networks, and from polling fans, I think that they believe there's a possibility of a better format, whether that involves any kind of head-to-head matches, it involves less guys on Sunday all playing for it. I mean, I think everything's pretty much on the table, and I'm not sure what they've narrowed it down to since.
Now, there had been a lot of speculation after last week's meeting in the White House that a deal was imminent. And even though tour officials are much more optimistic than they were beforehand, it's important to point out that yesterday's meeting of the policy board, that had been previously planned for months ahead of time. And according to various sources, there's no indication that an announcement of a new deal is imminent.
Well, if it's not imminent, if you're going to have to parse through the tea leaves, then at what point do you think it would seem most likely for an announcement to coincide with a big PGA Tour event? What would make the most sense?
I think, George, the important thing to note here is that the news will dictate the timing of this. If there is a deal, I feel like the tour is comfortable announcing whenever that might be. We've seen it over the last few months that they are communicating with the membership. However, in a perfect world, you would certainly look at certain dates. Next week, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. That's a signature event. You certainly wouldn't want to step on that event or the sponsors. The week after, the Players' Championship, the flagship event. So you wouldn't want to do it then. And then you only have 3 weeks between the Players and the Masters. So it's a really small window to try to get this done if you want to try to do this in a perfect world.
All right. He's Rex Hoggard. He'll be on site all week, Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. So Rex saying, Eamon, that you wouldn't want to step on sponsors' toes, but I would think that there could be some upside to adding the cachet if there's going to be movement from Live Guys to the PGA Tour or vice versa, that if it's there's at least a runway and a lead up to say, hey, you know what? This will be the first time you get to see Bryson or Brooks back on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and when it comes to an announcement as well, if you're going to put sponsors' sensitivities at the forefront, well, then you're going to have that issue every week on the PGA Tour. And frankly, some sponsors might actually welcome the draw and attention because there are going to be a lot more media eyeballs on their event that week as player reaction comes into whatever the news happens to be. I do think the week that you can rule it out is the week of the Masters. I don't think anyone is going near there. And if this thing does drag on subsequently deeper into the year, you can rule it out for the other major championships as well. I do think the goal was initially the tour thought they could make enough progress to not just have an announcement by the Players' Championship, but I do think there was some internal discussion that they could even potentially have invited a select number of Live guys to compete in the Players' Championship. That seems to be pretty much off the table at this stage and was probably always a very ambitious schedule. I honestly don't think the tour is that concerned at this point with sponsor sensitivities. It's more concerned with fan sensitivities. Fans are getting bored of the endless conversation. We're now almost 2 years into this from the framework agreement, and the fans kind of want to see wins. And I think the tour seems painfully conscious of that fact. That's why they've talked up this momentum. And so when they can deliver on that momentum, I think they'll do it at the first opportunity.
So if I can parse through what you're saying, then you would potentially think an announcement would be after the Masters?
I think if they are in a position to make an announcement, even the week of the Valero Texas Open, before the Masters, I think they will do so. And if that announcement could be made during the week of the Masters, then I think they'll make it in Hilton Head the week after it. I don't see them doing anything the week of the Masters. But other than that, at the first opportunity outside of that week, I do think they'll take it.
Jordan Spieth gave us some high-level input as far as the thought process that's going into the changes for the Tour Championship that are on the table. What was your takeaway from what Jordan Spieth had to share?
I think Jordan wasn't telling us much of anything that we don't already know. There are various iterations, as he said, of format changes out there that include elements of stroke play, elements of match play. It's very hard to know what they're deciding upon because a lot of guys were opposed when match play was discussed as a potential change to the Tour Championship years ago. And there were players who were opposed to it simply because they didn't want to play one day for that amount of money. Or they thought it would be a questionable broadcast because we've seen over the years in the past, the World Match Play Championship, that there isn't enough action on the course. And if the match is a blowout, it doesn't become a very compelling broadcast. Trying to balance those two and let all the other guys play out for the rest of the positions in that top 30 who make it to Eastlake, I don't think it's the easiest thing in the world to figure out, but it shouldn't be as complicated as the tour has made it over the years.
If you could wave a magic wand, what format would you want to see if you factored in also venue for the Tour Championship?
I would like to see it decided in a head-to-head match play between the top two players. Now, how you get to that point earlier in the week is another matter. And while those guys are fighting it out for the the $35 million or whatever it is now that is paid out to the winner, then the other 28 guys in the field are playing for positions 3 through 30 in a stroke play format.
I remember when these conversations were first bubbling up, and I believe they started discussing this, say 2017 or so, 2018, as far as where they landed with
it. Seems like the 1980s.
I know. It was a simpler time back then. As far as the staggered start, and one of the ideas that had been kicked around was to have a tour championship Wednesday to Saturday, and then either pare down to 6 or 8 guys and have a 2 threesomes or 2 foursomes and do a 1-day shootout for those top guys. Low man wins, and then you stack 1 through 8 there, and you already have 9 through 30 place. But then the downside is, do you have enough action with 2 groups or 4 twosomes? And then is there advantage if you start before the rest of those guys? I'm always leery of match play because historically, it is so rare that it pays off with an epic match that's going to be your Super Bowl and the culmination of your season. I wouldn't mind seeing the venues rotate. And I know the Tour Championship has been locked in because Coca-Cola, with FedEx as well, big sponsorships for the season-long race, Coca-Cola entrenched in the Atlanta community with Eastlake. But I do think the stage matters. And if you could end it at a Pebble Beach or other locations and have it bounce between New York and L.A. or big markets like that, it could add some additional gravitas to what's supposed to be one of the biggest events that you have on the PGA Tour calendar.
And you could expand that argument and say some of the other playoff events leading into Eastlake ought to travel a little bit more. I get the wariness over match play. The flip side is we've never seen match play contested head-to-head for the amount of money that those guys would be contesting.
Care about money?
I think it adds context to the kind of nervousness that you'd see out of guys in a head-to-head match play, because you're not playing against the course at that point. You're playing against the other guy as well. So I think it's a little bit different. But I also think they have to be wary of doing anything that really dilutes the integrity of the competition here, because ultimately it is the season finale of the PGA Tour, and you don't want it to be reduced to some kind of stunt format that really diminishes the quality of the event. Clearly, it's still an ongoing and fairly robust debate internally.
When they get to the finish line, and the PGA Tour isn't one to let you peek under the hood, but it would be fascinating to see what were the ideas and concepts that were kicked around. How did they put these in different buckets? What was the cost-benefit analysis as far as can we execute on this? What would the excitement factor be? How is this going to engage and bring in fans to understand, okay, where did they start? How did they end with this new format, and what else were they weighing to figure out, okay, did they take the best step forward factoring in fans and broadcast partners?
And the real question would be, of course, is whose voice carried the day? Is it the business investors who want to see a more robust product, or was it the players who've traditionally had it done the way they want to do it?
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Let's go flashback time. We're going to 2018 NCAA Men's Golf National Championships. Oklahoma State Cowboys were the host school in Stillwater, and they skunked Alabama 5-0 in the championship match to win their 11th national title.
And last year, a member of that team, Austin Eckroat, earned his first PGA Tour win at the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. Weather delays meant he had to wait for a Monday finish, but a final round 67 was good enough to find the winner's circle. And as you can tell from his bio, Austin Eckroat has won at every level. The high school state champion, he's been a Walker Cupper, NCAA champion, finally a PGA Tour winner.
And Austin Eckroat joins us now from PGA National Golf Club down in Palm Beach Gardens. Austin, it's your first time as a defending champion on the PGA Tour. Does this week feel any different other than just extra demands on your time?
Honestly, yeah, it feels very different. We're here, this is my first time defending on the PGA Tour, but it's also my first time defending since my senior year of high school. The last time I won in college, both of them, we didn't play the event the next year. So it's I haven't had this experience since my senior year of high school, so it's honestly special and really taking it in.
So you haven't had that experience in years. What's the mentality going to be?
In years, yes.
What's the mentality going to be this week as you ready yourself for a title defense on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, go through the same things I always do. Just treat it like any other event. But it's nice knowing I have, you know, good vibes out here, and I know exactly how to play this golf course and have success on it. And, you know, I think that's something that we search for weekly is the proper strategies, how to play certain holes. And, you know, luckily I've got the blueprint now. And, you know, just trying to do similar things and play it the same way.
A lot of guys have tried to play this golf course the same way over the years, Austin, as they did the year before.
Yeah.
Jack was the only guy ever defend this title back in 78, way down in Fort Lauderdale. Seb Straka tying for fifth a couple of years ago is the best any defending champion has ever done at PGA National. Why do you think this golf course is so difficult to repeat on?
Yeah, it's just one of those golf courses that, you know, no matter how well you're playing, there's always that looming air of just, you know, very close. There's big numbers to be made all over the golf course, and it's hard to avoid it for 8 straight days, I guess, is one way to look at it. You know, with avoiding most of the errors last year, I could see how it'd be difficult to do it 2 years in a row. Hopefully I have a better chance than the guys in the past, but like you said, though, it's a very difficult golf course, and, you know, mistakes be made across the whole golf course, and, you know, you're just trying to avoid those for the most part.
Austin, by your standards, been a bit of a slow start to the year. How do you balance the raised expectations as a two-time winner on the PGA Tour, thinking, I know I can contend, I got to get my game there, versus also having more patience with your card being locked up and knowing that you have some security to work through any dips?
Yeah, throughout my whole time I've been a professional, I've kind of struggled early in the season. Kind of struggled on the West Coast. It's I don't know if it just doesn't quite suit my golf game or what it is, but luckily I had 2 good finishes to start the season, to where I'm actually, you know, FedEx Cup wise, it's my best start to the season, even though I don't necessarily feel like it has been, just because I missed 3 cuts. But it's like you said, though, there is maybe a couple added pressures with, you know, having the expectations now to be contending, but with that comes, you know, a lot more comfortability out here, and I feel like I can win. So there's just a lot of pieces. I'm putting them all together, and it's just taking a little bit more time than I would have liked. But I'm feeling good, you know, looking into this season. The game's in a good spot. It's just putting it all together.
You have 2 wins in the past year on tour. You have a lot of solid finishes, Austin. Not a lot in the biggest weeks of the year, the majors, the signature events. Is that something you're focusing on this year? You did tie for 13th at Pebble recently. Is that something you're putting attention on this year, is those biggest events, to deliver a higher performance?
Yeah, I think this is my first year of having the ability to build a schedule from the start of the season. And I think I'm really trying to focus on, you know, gearing my game up for those bigger events, I guess you could say. It's, you know, making sure my game's in good spots going into those weeks. And, you know, I haven't had a whole lot of runs at the majors yet. I did have the 10th place finish at the U.S. Open, and then I think I finished 15th or something like that at the PGA Championship last season. So I know my game's in a spot to where I can contend in the bigger events and on the hard golf courses. So it's, like you said, I'm just trying to put in, you know, now that I have the ability to build a schedule to start the year, kind of trying to gear my game up to where I'm peaking for those events.
Austin, part of your story is your time in Stillwater and being part of that 2018 Oklahoma State National title team. If you look at the names that were on the roster for that season, it's amazing that you have 3 guys who won on the PGA Tour. Matthew Wolf was the first, then Victor Hovland became the tone setter now with 6 wins on the PGA Tour, FedEx Cup Championship. You have a couple wins. Sam Stevens, couple runners up. Chris Ventura back on the PGA Tour was T4th at the Farmers Insurance Open earlier this year. When you saw the early success of your teammates before you got on the PGA Tour, how big a motivator was that for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was funny. In college, I did a lot of interviews about how my last 2 roommates were both top 15 players in the world. I try to tell them, you know, I'm pretty good too, but no one was listening. yeah, it was huge for me having them as teammates. If they would have came out and I was, you know, definitely a step behind them in college at the time that they left. And if they would have came out and had struggled to keep their cards, and, you know, I would have realized I had a lot of work to do. But for them to come out and have immediate success put a lot of confidence in me, knowing that I just needed to make one more step and I could be doing the same things they are. And for me, I was very fortunate to have two guys on, you know, on my team that just went out there and tore it up right away. And, you know, it's just crazy to think about how good that team was. I mean, Zach Boshu got really close to getting his card as well. We would have had, you know, six of our top six players playing on two major tours throughout this season would have just been insane. And to have three winners already and Sam knocking on the door and Chris knocking on the door, it's pretty special.
There's so much attention these days, Austin, on everything that's happening outside the ropes with the PGA Tour, with negotiations and changes to tournament formats, things like that. Do you find that's much of a topic of conversation in the locker room or on the range? Are guys paying a lot of attention to that in your mind?
I mean, occasionally, but honestly, no. I think everybody's just trying to play golf and play best when they're playing. And, you know, wherever we're playing, just, you know, try our hardest. It's actually, I went to dinner with Matt Wolf last night, you know, one of my best friends, and we joked. He goes, "What do you know?" I said, "Nothing. What do you know?" Nothing. So it's very funny. We'd have no idea what's going on, so we're just playing golf when we can.
Well, we look forward to hopefully seeing you break that streak of defending champions, not actually defending their title this week. You can be the first since Jack 47 years ago with a little look this week. Thanks for joining us, Austin.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, anytime you have a chance to do something Jack did, that's pretty special. So.
Remember a couple of years ago in this event, Eric Cole nearly found his way into the winner's circle with some clutch play down the stretch. This was the 2023 Cognizant Classic. Cole would ultimately lose in a playoff to Chris Kirk, but this week, part of a season which saw Cole go on to take PGA Tour Rookie of the Year honors. And, I mean, what a splash he made on the PGA Tour. It took until the age of 34 to get out there. And his patience paid off in a big way. So Cole was runner-up there, also runner-up 2023 Zozo Championship, earned his card via the Korn Ferry Tour Finals. That always makes me laugh. 59 wins on the Minor League Golf Tour, was a Minor League Golf Tour legend, turned pro all the way back in 2009, took 14-year odyssey to get to the PGA Tour after his time at Nova Southeastern, where he was an All-American playing D2 golf. Now let's welcome in Eric Cole in the field this week at the Cognizant Classic. Eric, this is a spot that you've had some success in the past at PGA National. What is it about your game that's well-suited to this place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I just feel comfortable here. I live nearby, about 15 or 20 minutes away, and it's a course I've played a decent amount. And it's nice to be down here on grass that I'm familiar with, and, you know, the whole week in general just kind of seems like it's a comfortable place to be for me, and it's great to have friends and family out here kind of supporting me. So I think if you put all those things together, it just is a feel-good week for me.
Eric, congratulations on taking a week off last week, because you played six to open the year. You do play a lot. You played 34 last year. You played 37 events the year before that. Is that by design? Have you always been a guy who just wants to play a lot?
Yeah, I think for me, my path to the PGA Tour, it took me a lot longer to get here than I was kind of planning on, I guess. And so it's really hard for me to pass up a week on tour. I worked really hard to get there, and it's a place I always wanted to be. So anytime I have a chance to tee it up on tour is one that I'm very thankful and grateful for. And, you know, I do like to compete as well. Like, I like to, you know, play in tournaments and, you know, kind of feel the competitive juices flowing. So when you put those together, it's really hard for me to pass up.
On that subject of trying to maximize the opportunities, Eric, does that sense feel even more heightened this year now that we've gone from 125 cards down to 100, even though you've been playing at a level that's much higher than the bottom of that totem pole over the last couple of years? Is that still in the back of your mind even now?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of hasn't really changed much. You know, I did the same thing last year. I played the first seven in a row before the Florida swing. So I'm kind of in the same mindset, but I think I've seen a lot of guys are probably going to play more. I think with it just being a harder year to keep your card. Every opportunity you have to play out here is so important and can be so pivotal in whether it's keeping your card or giving yourself a chance to win. So I think a general trend on tour would definitely be that guys are probably going to play more this year than other years. But for me personally, it's kind of just part of my deal and how I do it. So not a big change in mindset for me.
Eric, each swing on the PGA Tour has its own personality. As we now embark on the Florida swing, you have this week, grind next week at Bay Hill, the Players' Championship after that. What's the stretch of golf like?
Traditionally, it's very difficult. The Florida swing's always really tough. There's a lot of really challenging shots into the greens, a lot of penalty areas around a lot of the greens, and it's kind of like, you know, old Florida golf, which I'm very comfortable with and familiar with. So it's, I think it's, you know, well, Bay Hill is a very difficult driving course, but I think the next four, all the Florida courses have a very difficult high value on the second shots or your approach into the green. So I think that's a unique thing to Florida in this stretch.
This is a home game for you this week, Eric. Is that a pleasure or distraction? Because I'm guessing you do get a lot of requests from family and friends who want to come out and watch.
Yeah, for sure. I think it can be kind of whatever you make it. For me, I love it. I love having a lot of friends from the area. And like you talked about, I play a lot, so I don't get to see a lot of them a lot of times. So for them to be able to come out and watch me play and hopefully play well is really cool. It's a great environment for me. And I kind of put my wife to work a little bit. She's in charge of keeping the tickets, handling the tickets and making sure everybody gets them. So that's kind of our system, and it's worked out well so far.
Eric, this week home game, next week de facto home game from your time in Orlando. Do you put added pressure on yourself those couple weeks, or is that more so if the stakes are elevated in a major championship or the Players?
I don't know. That's a good question. I just think it's really cool is kind of the attitude I bring to it. Like I said, I don't get to see a lot of my friends that often, and to be able to have them, and family too, especially next week in Orlando. I have a lot of family that still lives there. So for them to be able to come out and watch me play is really cool. And it's something that, you know, it's a proud moment for me to be able to, you know, share it with them and experience it with them. So that's kind of the attitude I take into it. So no pressure, all fun.
Yeah, I love to hear that, Eric. And I mean, with how much you play, you're the Cal Ripken of the PGA Tour, throwback these days, which is nice to see. Play well this week.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Of course, you can see Eric and the rest of the guys in the PGA Tour first round coverage Thursday 2 Eastern. Here's what's happening this week on golf. Asian Tour with the New Zealand Open. LPGA Tour continues there. Asia Swing, HSBC Women's World Championship, and the DP World Tour in South Africa, Investec South African Open Championship.